Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio.
Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeartRadio, and I love all things tech. It's time for another Tech Stuff Classic episode, and this time we're going to look at a topic that was something of a controversial topic within my old workspace over at howstuffworks.com. It's Tech Stuff Tackles Wikipedia. And the reason it was controversial is that, well, Wikipedia was not considered a reliable resource for us to use when we were researching materials for podcasts or for articles, because mostly we were writing articles back then. This episode originally published on April 29th, 2013. Let's listen in.
It's a matter of some debate among lots and lots of people online, and there are good points and bad points. We're going to cover them all. We are, of course, talking about Wikipedia. And you guys who are longtime listeners of Tech Stuff might remember that Chris and I did an episode about wikis, and we touched upon Wikipedia a little bit, but that was many years ago. Other stuff has happened, as things are wont to do over the course of time, and we decided we wanted to really look at what made Wikipedia what it was and what it is, and how has it changed over the time that it's existed, and some of the reasons why Wikipedia is a very useful tool, and some reasons why people either maybe not dismiss it, but
some ways that it could perhaps be improved.
Yeah, and reasons why some people suggest extreme caution before relying too heavily upon it, and before we get really into this at all. You know, I used to write for HowStuffWorks.com a lot. I occasionally still do, but I mostly do podcasts now and things like that.
Blogs are about the writing level at this juncture.
Right. But I used to write these long articles. And one of the policies at HowStuffWorks is that you do not use Wikipedia as a source.
Ever. Yeah.
And I
used to be an editor before I was a podcaster and social media person. And yes, that was one of the things that we very firmly enforced.
Right.
Or still do.
And really the reason for that has nothing to do with whether or not something to do with whether or not the information you find on Wikipedia is reliable. But more importantly, Wikipedia is a dynamic thing.
Right. It can be written and edited by anybody.
At any time. And so when you sit there and cite something from Wikipedia, it may be the next time someone visits that particular entry, the information has changed. And it may be that the information now is more accurate than it was, or maybe less accurate. At any rate, the things that make Wikipedia a useful tool in day-to-day, I need to get this information, are the same things that make it a dangerous tool
right.
if you are writing in any sort of academic or professional
capacity.
Capacity, sure. Yeah. Thank you, editor, for giving me the word that I don't have. But really, before we get into all the pros and cons that I've already just touched on, let's talk about the history. So before there was a Wikipedia, back when there was just barely a web.
Yeah. It was more local networks of computers, and some of them could, you know, key into other local networks.
Yeah, we did have an internet, and the web was a thing, but it was very young. But back in 1993, so, you know, the web essentially is introduced in 92, right?
Right.
93, so web has not been around for very long. Rick Gates comes up with this idea. He says, you know what would be really super awesome? If we were to build an encyclopedia that lived on the internet. And if you made that encyclopedia something that anyone could contribute to, so that way you could tap into the world's knowledge, and people who are really
just experts in whatever field that they're in, they can go in and share that knowledge.
Right. And then you have the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, right?
Right.
Except it's really the Hitchhiker's Guide to Earth. So it would be more than mostly harmless.
Earth and a small amount of the surrounding galaxy. But
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. But essentially, the sum total of what human knowledge is
uh-huh.
could go on the internet and be in a database that you could search, and it would be the world's most complete encyclopedia. A fellow by the name of R.L. Samuel came up with an idea to call it Interpedia. And it was kind of this interesting point of discussion, but it never went beyond that. It was just one of those, hey.
Wouldn't it be cool if?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Maybe if someone who has more time and resources could do this, it would be awesome. And then in 1994, a very important development happened. And I was amazed that it happened this early, because this was the development of the Wiki platform. And the fact
right.
that it happened in 94 amazes me, because I was largely unaware of wikis until Wikipedia came along.
Yeah, me as well.
So, I mean, I had been on the web since the early 90s, but I just didn't know about wikis for many years. I mean, almost a decade. And it was and when I finally did start to learn about wikis, they were strange and unusual to me, because it was a different experience than your average website.
Right. Yeah. Usually most websites and most books are based on this idea that there is one expert who is this terrific expert and is talking to you about this thing.
Yeah.
And that's where it starts and stops. You know, no one's arguing with them particularly.
Right. There might be some form of comment ability on a site where people can contribute into the discussion. But in general, the content of the site itself is created by a person or an organization, but no one else.
Right.
It's not like, you know, Bob can just log in and put in Bob's section, and then Joe over here logs in and puts in Joe's section.
Right.
It's Bob and Joe can't do anything, because they can just go and view the site. Well, the wiki was based on a completely different idea, and it was designed by a guy named Ward Cunningham.
And this first one was for software developers.
Yeah, yeah. He was he worked for a software consulting company that he was a partner in. It was Cunningham & Cunningham, also known as C2.com. And he was developing this this platform for Portland Pattern Repository. And he called it WikiWikiWeb.
Right, based on the Hawaiian word wiki or wiki-wiki, which means
quick.
Yeah,
there's the wiki-wiki shuttle in Honolulu, which is an airport shuttle.
Oh.
I've been on the shuttle, and I remember my wife being really amused every time she saw the wiki-wiki shuttle. She just loved wiki-wiki. obviously, I've married the right woman. So So Ward Cunningham comes up with this idea for the wiki, and essentially what a wiki is it's a website that has collaborative editing tools built into the site itself. So you navigate to the site through a browser.
Right.
And within the browser, you can make changes to the site collaboratively. So you, depending upon the level of administrative power you have, you can edit things, you can add things, you can delete things. And it's, since it's all within the web browser, you're using a basic markup language or maybe some sort of rich text editor. And it'll let people collaborate on projects, even if they had different machines, right? So if Lauren's using a Mac and I'm using a PC, not only do we hate each other, but often we can't work on the same thing because our platforms are so different.
Right.
But this is web-based, so all we have to do is use
whichever web browser we both can use.
And then we navigate there, and we can make these changes and build our collaborative I hate you website together. And other people can join in and explain why they hate everybody, too. And I don't know why I'm so negative today, but apparently that's how this is going to work. But anyway, so Cunningham develops this wiki technology, which is what makes Wikipedia possible. But we're not at Wikipedia yet. Now,
right, because, yeah. Well, or go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, in 1999, that's when we start talking about Jimmy Wales, who is kind of the face of Wikipedia.
Right, yeah. I was going to say that at the same time, around 1994, was when Jimmy Wales had dropped out of college. He had started a couple months or for a finance PhD from Indiana University, mm-hmm. and wound up, instead of doing that, going to Chicago to be a futures and options trader. And supposedly, much like Elon Musk, who we have previously profiled, Jimmy Wales noticed that, you know, Netscape went public and what, quadrupled in value overnight?
Netscape did well.
Yes. They did good.
Yeah.
And took note of that and said, hey, this internet thing that I've been kind of playing around with for a few years, I think that this could be a thing.
Yeah, this might go places. And of course, remember, this is all before the dot-com bubble burst, too. So,
of course.
Back then, it was all opportunity and wild west, and no one was really sure.
And bright, shining dreams.
Yeah, it was interesting. The roads weren't paved with gold, but they were paved with stock options. Jimmy Wales has this thought while he's working for a he's part owner of a company called Bomis.com.
Which is a search engine.
Yeah, and he owned that with two other joint owners, Tim Shell and Michael Davis. Well, in 99, he comes up with his version, his idea, for a free collaborative encyclopedia. And he taps a guy named Larry Sanger to be the project lead for this new encyclopedia. Now, he knew Sanger from mailing lists, because this isn't that long after the fact that people were just using things like Usenet and mailing lists instead of the web. And so he got in touch with Sanger and convinced Sanger to head up a project, this collaborative encyclopedia, which at that point did not have a name.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, they had been thinking, I've read, about open source software and how open source culture could also be a thing.
Yeah.
And a beautiful thing. And so.
And yeah, and that was kind of, when you look back at Tim Berners-Lee, who's the guy who essentially created what we know of as the web, that was sort of his approach, too. He thought that open was the right way to go,
mm-hmm.
that the open collaborative way would mean that the Internet becomes the world's tool, not any one company or government's tool.
Sure.
And so this was sort of the idea of let's make an encyclopedia that follows those same kind of philosophies.
Yeah.
And so so Wales and Sanger and a few others start to form a project that they call Newpedia, Nupedia.
And this was a peer-reviewed encyclopedia that they were going to put online. And, you know, because they wanted that expert opinion to come in, and they wanted everything to be as factual and reliable as possible.
Exactly. In fact, Sanger, he was passionate about this. He said that, you know, you could create an online encyclopedia where everyone just contributes, but if you wanted to be a reliable resource, you need that peer review step in there. So,
and it turned out to be extremely slow to get people to submit anything at all, because it was intimidating, and B, to you know, find the correct expert to
look it over. And also, the review process was, as Sanger would describe later, laborious.
Huh.
So 2000 is when Newpedia starts, and it starts in the middle of 2000 or so. And they had an advisory board, a sort of a peer review board made up of PhD volunteers. So these are people who are not even being paid. They're volunteering their expertise to review papers to make sure that they are they're ready for publication. So this is like if you were to submit a paper to an academic journal,
right,
or a scientific journal. You know, it's something that it's not just automatically going to get published. It has to be reviewed and pass review. There might be a lengthy revision process before it will ever be published.
Mm-hmm.
So there were seven steps in this review process for Newpedia.
And they did think that it would work. I read somewhere that Wales really thought that, you know, it had been in conversations with people on the internet and had realized that if it's something that they feel passionate about, that they're usually really willing to engage in that conversation and to help.
Yeah. So the idea was that, you know, you get people who are really smart. A lot of really smart people enjoy spreading knowledge.
That we would know anything about wanting to show off knowledge.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really smart, but I still like to do it.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, that's why I play trivia, is really just to show off how smart I am. But I know that compared to these people, I was, and still am, stupid. But anyway,
aww.
So, or at least, okay, no.
Stupid, smart in a different way.
Okay,
anyway.
Thank you. Everyone's special, and nobody is. So yeah, the seven-step process to publish, to review before you would publish an article, it turned out that this was a bit of a bottleneck. And the very first Newpedia article that was ever published was written by Christoph Hust, and it was about atonality. And it was published in the summer of 2000. So it was early 2000 when they started working on Newpedia. At that time, the entire submission and review process was all through mailing lists. There wasn't a web-based version yet.
Right.
And so the first article publishes in the summer of 2000. It was either June or July, according to Sanger, who wrote about this. I found it on Slashdot. He wrote a two-part piece that was essentially about the whole beginning of Wikipedia, which started with this Newpedia thing. Well, in January 2001, Sanger and Wales meet up with a guy named Ben Kovitz at the infamous Taco Stand meeting.
Taco Stand meeting.
Yeah, they were in California and they were at a taco stand. And they started talking, and Kovitz told Wales and Sanger about Cunningham's WikiWiki web platform. And they thought about this as being a tool that would allow for collaborative work and make it much easier to get articles. And Sanger was still thinking about this peer review process.
Oh, right. But they were thinking that in order to get more submissions, in order to make it a little bit less intimidating for people to, you know, to submit an article to this crazy peer review thing.
Yeah, to say, like, don't worry so much about the quality, just submit stuff. Because it turned out that one of the things they were worried about was that they needed to have content.
Uh-huh.
And part of the philosophy was that if we can fix content, if the content's not perfect, we can still edit it once we get it. But if we never get any content,
right,
there's no encyclopedia.
Right, because I think at the time they had maybe 20 articles. I mean, something, you know, a very low number.
Yeah, it wasn't. Yeah, it was 25 articles by the winter of 2001. So summer 2000, their first article publishes. More than a year later, they have 25 articles on Newpedia.
Which is more articles than I write in a year, but I mean,
it was fewer than what I wrote in a year. In a year, I would write around 100 articles. So
sure.
It's kind of, you know, but that shows you there was this bottleneck process. And you know, you find out that a volunteer might love their field of expertise, but they're still a volunteer. So they're still limited by the fact that they have to do other things, most mm-hmm. of them, unless they're independently wealthy. They have other responsibilities they have to attend to. But while they were thinking about this, they decided to launch a wiki for Newpedia. And they launched that wiki on January 10th, 2001. So Newpedia is still a thing, but they launch a wiki for it with the idea of making it this faster way to contribute articles.
Mm-hmm. And I think it actually goes live on January 15th. If any of you know about Wikipedia Day and are going like, that wasn't on the 10th.
Well, here's why.
Mm-hmm.
The wiki goes live on the 10th.
Mm-hmm.
The advisory board says, I don't want anything to do with that. Like, essentially what happened was the peer review board looked at the wiki and said, look, we have these other backlog of articles that we're still reviewing. We cannot deal with this nonsense. So what happened was the Newpedia wiki split from Newpedia and became its own thing. And on January 15th, it became Wikipedia.
Right.
So Wikipedia began as a branch of Newpedia, where it was all going to be peer-reviewed, but then became its own thing, where the peer review kind of went away. The idea was that the community would review. And so it wouldn't be peer-reviewed in the sense of an official board of experts. It would be the community of Wikipedia collectively would be able to review and edit the content that was being uploaded.
And that kind of spread of the workload was really important because they had 150 entries by the end of February.
Yeah, it was it went really pretty crazy. According to Sanger, he said by the end of January 2001, there were 600 articles on Wikipedia.
Okay. Well,
so 600. But that's Sanger. And that was from memory. Uh-huh. So you got to keep in mind, this is Sanger writing in 2005 about what happened in 2001.
Yes.
So Sanger says that by the end of 2001, there were 600 articles. And by by the end of January 2001, there were 600 articles. By March, 1,300. By April, 2,300.
Oh,
and
goodness.
By May, 3,900. So not only were more articles coming online, but the growth rate was increasing over time. Not exponentially, but pretty regularly.
Sure.
So it was very quickly becoming popular. And in April 2001, that's when Jimmy Wales decided to post a thing where he defined that the Wikipedia voice was to be one of neutral point of view, or NPOV. And Sanger actually objected to this as well. Not that he objected to the idea of neutrality. He thought that was important. He objected to the phrase point of view because he said that it still means that the article has a point of view and it shouldn't. Sanger, in some of his points I was reading in this stuff I saw on Slashdot, I was thinking, this is getting to be a little bit about semantics.
Weird and pedantic.
Yeah, little bit.
Uh-huh.
I respect a lot of what he was saying, but
I think that you know, pedantic has a place on the internet, absolutely.
Does whenever I'm in a comment. It's my first weapon of choice. So by the winter of 2001, that's when only 25 articles had published on Newpedia, and the approval process moved so slowly that even when the tools to review and approve articles moved from email to web-based clients, it just wasn't doing very well.
Uh-huh.
And because it was such a slow process, more and more of the people involved in it began to neglect it and drop off of it. And Wikipedia, at that same time, was getting more and more popular. So Sanger's responsibilities were starting to shift more toward Wikipedia than Newpedia, simply because that's where all the action was. So by 2001 and into 2002, Newpedia activity had slowed dramatically. And also the bubble by then, the .com bubble, had burst, which really kind of wiped out a lot of the folks who were contributing in some way. So that kind of also made the funding kind of dry up for Newpedia. Wikipedia, by the way, was existing at that time and still is to this day on donations.
Right.
So the Newpedia was trying really hard to redefine the rules that were needed to review submissions so that they could streamline the process. But by that time, it was too little too late.
Sure.
And it gets really sad in another year, but when I get there, I'll mention it. So even at this early stage of Wikipedia, Sanger was really saying, let's pay attention to what experts have to say. Let's give them special attention and respect and make sure that their voices are the ones we pay the most attention to. Not that we won't accept submissions from the general public, but that we should pay more attention to things that are coming from people who are recognized
from
as
credible
experts.
Sources.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And 'cause again, this is Sanger saying that in order to be a credible resource for people, you have to have some form of review or you know, you have to have some way of saying the information here is from
right the same way that scientific journals won't just, you know, accept research that has not been checked over by a peer review system,
because at least it's ideally
right. Fingers crossed.
If you ever hear, in fact, this is just a little side note, this is important. If you're reading something on Wikipedia and you look at the references, it's something that Lauren and I do a lot. It's important also to pay attention to what the references are, because there are quote-unquote scientific papers out there that are actually blogs that aren't scientific papers.
Right.
So then you will, quote unquote, have a paper published in a scientific journal, but it's not a peer-reviewed scientific journal.
Correct, yeah.
I see this with a lot of free energy papers, where free energy is one of those things where, like, well, it was published in such and such. I'm like, yeah, I checked that out. That's that guy's personal blog. He called it the Journal of Nuclear Physics, but it's just his blog.
It was a live journal. Yeah. We just did an episode about nuclear power, not fusion power.
Yeah.
And cold fusion, and there was a lot of that.
Yeah, so that's stuck in my head. Yes, exactly. If you do research on cold fusion, you'll find, quote unquote, papers, but they are posted on online resources that turn out to be not an actual scientific journal.
Right.
That doesn't necessarily mean that the research is unreliable. It just means that you don't have that peer review to really be sure that it's passed muster.
And also, before I was an editor here, I was actually an editor for a medical research journal about rheumatism. And so I am intimately acquainted with the peer review process.
Yeah. Well, moving on, talking about the difference between Wikipedia and peer review, Sanger actually talked about how he had suggested a rule called ignore all rules. And in his 2005 recounting of the beginning of Wikipedia, he said that the Wikipedia community might be surprised to hear that he was the one who suggested that. Because, you know, again, Sanger was the one who was all about peer review. Mm-hmm. And here he is saying, ignore all rules. And his philosophy was that, again, they wanted to get as much content on Wikipedia as possible. And if the rules intimidated someone so that they did not feel like they were qualified or capable of posting, he wanted to take that barrier away.
Right.
But he thought of that as a temporary measure, something to get Wikipedia going, to get the ball rolling.
Mm-hmm. And that, maybe not as something that would wind up being one of the continuing five pillars of Wikipedia today.
Not a central tenet of the entire site.
Yeah.
So ignore all rules. He kind of later on said that I kind of regret saying that now, because he felt that that was one of the paths
downfalls of his. Yeah, there was a little bit of a falling out.
Sanger definitely, if you read his stuff, you see, and I mean, there's a lot of rancor on both parts, right?
Absolutely.
Sanger has a lot to say about the direction that Wikipedia took, and it's pretty clear that he feels that it's not ideal. I mean, he doesn't outright come out and say that this is it's useless or anything like that, but he has a lot of criticisms.
Yes.
Meanwhile, the Wikipedia community, in turn, has a lot of criticisms that they direct to Sanger, and both sides have relevant points. So even though I'm talking a lot about Sanger, it's mainly because that's the account I went with for the history.
Early years.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's not that I necessarily side 100% with Sanger. I'm not that far to that extreme. Anyway, a lot of the policies of Wikipedia actually came out of the community. It became sort of communal decisions of how the site should work, which was kind of interesting because they had originally thought of it being sort of, again, an extension of Newpedia, but this became more of the open communal approach to the internet, which again is more of the Tim Berners-Lee approach.
Sure.
Which makes it a lot harder to direct. You know, you can't, you know, when you've got a group of 50 people who have all decided they want to go left, it's really hard to make them go right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're one guy.
Yeah. And, you know, and there's voting systems in place. There's, you know, even back in those days, there were a lot of ways for people to communicate with each other these ideas that they had for the community.
But yeah. They had decided that that Wikipedia content would always remain free for others to read and edit, meaning that there would never be a point where there'd be a paywall or subscription for Wikipedia. And they also, you know, were putting in those policies that allowed people to publish rough drafts or rough ideas that could be polished over time, either by themselves or by other people. And then Google started to include Wikipedia in its search results for different topics, which meant that there was suddenly a huge rush of
new people.
Yeah. And Sanger noticed, like, as more people were coming to visit Wikipedia, more of them were getting involved as editors and contributors. So that meant that as the Wikipedia traffic was increasing, so was the content. You were suddenly seeing even faster growth as far as how much information was being contained within Wikipedia. Before I get to the summer of 2001, one thing Sanger did note was that even in those early days, he was starting to notice that people who were difficult and who were persistent were sometimes irritating very valuable members of the Wikipedia community. And the valuable members were like, I don't need this.
Never mind. I'm a volunteer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See ya. And they just left. And then so that meant that you started to have more of the persistent, difficult type and fewer of the valuable expert types. And Sanger saw that as another kind of downfall of Wikipedia. And there wasn't really any way to counteract that without essentially violating kind of those philosophies that Wikipedia was founded upon.
Right. And, you know, one of those philosophies is definitely that editors and contributors should be polite to each other.
Which happens sometimes.
But yeah, exactly. You know, it's human error. It's,
yeah. I mean, the vast majority, I think the vast majority of people who are regular contributors to Wikipedia are, in general, very courteous.
Yes.
But all it takes are a few trolls to really stir things up, and trolls who are particularly effective can cause huge amounts of frustration in a community. And in fact, that's why they do it. You know, it's
right.
So with a little effort, they make a big impact. And boy, we did a whole episode on how trolls work. It was a great one. You guys should go back and listen to that one. But in summer of 2001, someone ended up using the editing tools to vandalize the front page of Wikipedia, because that was one of the ones you could edit back in those days. And so they vandalized it, and then someone tried to archive the vandalized page. So Sanger went in and deleted the archive. So then they kind of reposted the archive somewhere else, and Sanger went in and deleted that. And this became a big kerfuffle between Sanger and the community. The community, not the entire community, but there were sections of the community that said, you are overstepping your bounds.
Right. This is not yours to do this with.
You're
this
abusing power.
Powers.
Yeah. Yeah. The fact that you have the ability to do that doesn't mean that you are.
Should.
That you should do that.
Yeah.
Like, you are capable of doing that, but you should not do it. And Sanger was like, this is kind of silly. The whole point of this is that we don't want the vandalized version of Wikipedia to be a representation of Wikipedia. We don't want that to come up in search because it hurts the community. I don't see where the problem is. And others were saying, no, that's beside the point. It doesn't matter what the content is. It's the matter is that you've deleted it. You've overstepped.
If you start deleting, then where does it end?
Right. You've bypassed the whole process, and by bypassing it, you've rendered the process meaningless, and it went from kerfuffle to shenanigans. Well, in 2002, February 2002, Sanger is laid off of Wikipedia. At that point, the dot-com bubble bursting had really started to take its effect. Newpedia essentially was petering out at that point. And at first, Sanger had his salary reduced a couple times, I think, and then he was laid off. He continued to work in a volunteer capacity for a little while. Also in February 2002, the Spanish language version of Wikipedia forked off of the main version and became Encyclopedia Libre. And the reason for the split was that the people working on the Spanish side were worried that there was going to be problems with censorship. Things like Sanger deleting stuff.
Yeah.
And also there was worry that Wikipedia would soon start to institute advertising on its site to monetize Wikipedia. And that there was a worry there that by monetizing Wikipedia, you would compromise the site's integrity.
Sure.
Which is something that Sanger was saying didn't exist because of the lack of peer review. So it's kind of this interesting, like, you're going to ruin the integrity of the site. And Sanger's like, what integrity? So that was an interesting discussion. And in August of 2002, Jimmy Wales said that Wikipedia would never run ads on its site. And in fact, that's also when Wikipedia.com became Wikipedia.org as sort of an example of this is who we are.
Yes.
We're not a company.
Yeah.
We're an organization. In December of that year, in 2002, they launched Wiktionary, which is kind of funny because there was a whole page on Wikipedia about how Wikipedia is not a dictionary.
Not a dictionary.
So they did Wiktionary. Now, Lauren, let me ask you this. Do you think, I can understand the value of an open source, crowdsourced encyclopedia.
Sure.
Because there are huge disciplines of knowledge out there. There are people who are experts in it. There are people who have experience with it. There are researchers who really know what they're doing when they're looking into that sort of stuff. And the more minds you bring into an encyclopedia, the better chance you have of getting a fuller picture of whatever it is, right? Do you see the same thing being valuable in a dictionary?
Well, okay. The thing about dictionaries, I think, now that you ask me, is that, you know, there are these really terrific, very thorough sources like the Oxford English. It's probably the pinnacle of English dictionaries, if I'm allowed to make that kind of qualitative statement right now.
I'm American heritage myself, but, you know.
Well, I didn't know that about you, Jonathan.
I support my country. Why do you hate America, Lauren? Why do you hate America?
Well, because you know, there are these large resource dictionaries that have a terrific wealth of historical information behind them. However, they are a little bit slow on the uptake of new words.
I see. So you would see the value of Wiktionary being something that could incorporate words that are entering the lexicon that would maybe take 5 to 10 years to start at the fastest speed possible, 5 to 10 years to be incorporated into a dictionary, classic dictionary.
Oh, right. And also, you know, to do it in a way that is, you know, not branded, because as much as I do love very specific dictionaries, they're brands, they're companies, they're out there to make a profit. At the end of the day. And so having a open source one is a really terrific idea, and having one that's perhaps better policed than, for example, Urban Dictionary, I think is
fair.
a good thing to do.
Okay. Although, to be fair, it's still community policed.
Well, it is, but I would say that the quality of policing on Wiktionary versus Urban Dictionary is...
That's fair. I can agree to that, because I don't know of any policing that happens on Urban Dictionary.
I don't think that that's a thing. No.
So June 2003, Wales announces the Wikimedia Foundation, which is a nonprofit that administrates Wikipedia. And in September 2003, Nupedia's servers crash, and it never comes back.
Yeah, it just shuts down.
The computer failed, so we're just going to leave it.
I don't think it ever really got more than those 20, 25 articles. I think that was about it.
Kind of the peak.
Yeah.
Know. Wow. Yeah. So Nupedia was a failed experiment. Wikipedia, what was originally going to just be a little offshoot of Nupedia, was already a rousing success.
Yeah. Yeah. There were many other non-English sites that were launching around that time. I think that not all of them had officially split off yet.
Right.
But there were at least 17 different languages being worked on within Wikipedia.
Hey, guys, we're going to come right back to this classic episode of Tech Stuff about Wikipedia. But first, I got to follow this link because I'm learning all about gophers. I'll be right back.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed...
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
All right, now back to Wikipedia. Okay, so we just talked about 2003. Do you have anything between 2003 and 2005? Because otherwise I'm just going to skip right on ahead.
I believe that in 2004, Wikia was founded, which is the for-profit kind of branch of Wikipedia that that maintains a whole bunch of entertainment, mostly related wikis. I think that the Wikipedia is among them, stuff like that.
Oh, okay. And, you know, those are the wikis that I've recently become more and more familiar with because, you know, pretty much any kind of entertainment thing out there has its own wiki. Mm-hmm. To the point where I'm like, I can't believe this has a wiki. I can't believe tech stuff doesn't. Huh. Anyway.
These are ad supported. However, they're still community run and, you know.
Yeah, right. So similar, but again, this is following more along the wiki lines of philosophy rather than the Wikipedia one. Because again, one of the things Sanger also said in his talks or in his writings was that, you know, he saw that the wiki philosophy was kind of counter to that of an encyclopedia. Like the two did not
mesh.
Move. Yeah,
you know,
it didn't mesh in a very very seamless way, and that that was a concern to him, but that he felt that because Wikipedia was specifically supposed to be an encyclopedia, it helped guide the policies for better or for worse. So it's the community on Wikipedia is not exactly the same as what you would find on your average wiki,
right?
Because the process is slightly different because it has a very specific purpose to be an encyclopedia. Well, in 2005, Wired published a report that said that that Jimmy Wales had done something that is generally frowned upon within the Wikipedia community.
And that is to edit your own page.
18 times, apparently.
Hmm. And supposedly the edits that were made were removing things like Sanger's involvement in the early genesis of Wikipedia.
Yeah, essentially there was a charge that Wales had removed a sentence that had referred to Sanger as a co-founder of Wikipedia. And then there were other things as well that Wales said was just an attempt to remove some inaccuracies. He wasn't
whitewashing
something.
Anything or cleaning it out.
Yeah,
but
according to what he was saying anyway.
Mm-hmm. But still defends this, by the way.
Right. In general, that's considered bad form on Wikipedia. It's not explicitly against the rules. But
yeah.
You're generally,
if you find an inaccuracy about something that concerns you, due to, and they have an acronym for it and all, it is the conflict of interest.
Okay.
Bit of it that you're supposed to submit it to an editor who can then make a non-conflict of interest judgment call about whether or not the edit needs to be made.
That's interesting. That particular sequence is going to play an important part toward the end of this timeline conversation.
Definitely.
Because it turns out some people have taken advantage of that particular approach to the point where they have been able to insert misleading information or at least leaving out important truths in the process of quote-unquote correcting or adding to an article.
But we'll get to that in a moment.
Yeah, so Wales ends up getting some heat for this, even though to this day he says that, you know, it was not a big deal. It's not that he doesn't even say he didn't do anything wrong. He's like, I don't understand what the big deal is here.
Right.
I was fixing errors.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, I did it. There was nothing wrong with what I did.
Yeah.
So calm down.
But then, you know, other people would say, well, if you had just gone through the regular channels, then it would have been a non-story.
Sure. Yeah.
May of 2005 was when we had an anonymous user who was later identified, but I'm not going to say the name here. But he posted comments in an article about Siegenthaler, John Siegenthaler, saying that he was a suspect in the assassinations of both John and Robert Kennedy. Siegenthaler is a journalist and was a friend to Robert Kennedy, actually one of his pallbearers.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
So Siegenthaler said that this amounted to internet character assassination. The comments were a hoax. It was supposed to be a joke, although I don't know who would find this particularly
pretty
funny.
Pretty poor joke, yeah.
But the hoax, it was made in May, but it wasn't discovered until September of 2005. And then the mainstream media caught hold of the story and began to cover it. And this ended up being a big black eye on Wikipedia because everyone ran with the story saying, how can you trust a resource that anyone can go into and change?
And vandalize or create a hoax like this,
right.
Create a joke.
Yeah, insert completely false information or delete something so that whatever is left is not an accurate portrayal of the actual subject.
Quid pro quo, the entire site is useless.
Yeah.
You know, what sensationalist media was kind of saying
right,
about.
Right, it definitely escalated to from, hey, sometimes you can't trust what's on Wikipedia to Wikipedia is bad because people are evil.
Yes.
And they will mislead you.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I don't really think either extreme is healthy. While I often will dismiss Wikipedia in any sort of academic approach, I am not one to say that it's all bad
all the time.
Useless.
Yeah.
There's some things about Wikipedia that I find genuinely amusing, and there's some things I find genuinely helpful. But yeah, I would never go so far on either side.
No, me neither.
Yeah, it's good to know. So April 2006, we have another scandal. A guy from Glasgow, whose name I will not be able to say, Alan McIlraith. It's got to be McIlraith, right?
I don't have it in front of me. That sounds
it's
perfect.
It's got to be McIlraith.
I'm sure.
McIlraith, McIlraith. So he created a Wikipedia entry about himself that portrayed him as a decorated army officer, something that he was not.
Ah.
And again, the mainstream media picked up on this and said, like, here's a guy who is promoting himself, created a false identity for himself, and this shows that you can't trust what's on Wikipedia.
Yeah. Meanwhile, all this bad press was not particularly affecting the growth of Wikipedia. By mid-2006, I think they had 5 million articles published.
Yeah. Yeah, so. They went from, they had 1 million in English, but probably 5 million, I think, total.
Total.
Yeah, so.
Right. There's a little bit of debate about.
Well, because I got confused. I saw at one point, like in 2004, they hit 1 million articles. And then I read later, I'm like, in 2006, they hit 1 million articles. I'm like, again? And then I realized, oh, wait, the first one, 2004, was 1 million articles total across all languages. 2006 was 1 million in English.
Right.
But it was, the growth was incredible. And in 2007, we have another scandal. This is when it was discovered that a Wikipedia editor who was using a handle called SJ, E-S-S-J-A-Y, was discovered to have also created a false identity. In this case, SJ had been posing as someone who held a PhD in theology, I assume, because he was saying that he was a tenured professor with an expertise in canon law. And in reality, he was a 24-year-old guy who had been to several colleges in Kentucky.
Less of an expert, perhaps.
Yeah.
But objectively speaking,
he was saying that he had created this identity in order to give himself a buffer so that people who disagreed with him would not be able to attack him personally. So in other words, he was just creating a handle. It's just a little bit more more involved than just a handle. But here's the problem. He was also using his fake credentials to back up his arguments whenever he was making edits.
Oh, like, yeah, that's going beyond.
Yeah. He's saying, like, because of my expertise in this field, I know that this particular thing should be worded this way rather than that way. And he didn't hold those credentials. So the New Yorker writes about Wikipedia and they write about SJ before finding out that SJ is not who he claims to be. Then the information breaks that SJ is actually someone else, and the New Yorker ends up writing a pretty strongly worded response to that. And again, mainstream media blows up, and online it blows up. The community begins to sift through all the edits that SJ made on Wikipedia, particularly in the places where he was using his false credentials to bolster his arguments, because now the community has the responsibility to fix this, or if it in fact needs to be fixed, they have to address it so that they can again show that Wikipedia is something you can rely upon, at least, or that it's at least useful.
Right.
And not just
that it shouldn't just be raised to the ground.
Yeah, it's not just a database of information you cannot really be sure is accurate or not. It was, you know, it was fighting a powerful perception problem, right?
Right, right. That was also that was also the year 2007 that Virgil Griffith released Wikiscanner.
Oh, I don't know about this one.
Okay, so Wikiscanner was this, you know, terrific little program that he wrote that whenever an unregistered anonymous user edits a Wikipedia entry, the site logs the user's IP address.
Ah.
And this can come in terrifically handy because, you know, it's not all the problems are with people pretending to be who they aren't. When an anonymous user can log in and talk about anything that they want to, you know, for the kind of things that were coming out of this Wikiscanner business were facts like people from Apple IP addresses had been editing Microsoft pages on Wikipedia and vice versa.
Right. Which is another reason why we find Wikipedia. It's one of those reasons why it's hard to trust stuff, because sometimes people with an agenda will go in and adjust an entry either to make one party and it look better than it would otherwise have looked, or look worse depending upon the person's agenda.
Sure, yeah. A member, you know, and Democratic Party member's IP address was traced to edits about Rush Limbaugh that were extremely unflattering.
Yeah, this has happened. Any election year, this stuff runs rampant.
Oh, sure.
To the point where sometimes Wikipedia will lock down a particular page about a subject in order to avoid the crazy number of edits that different sides of a debate will put onto a page in order to support their side. I mean, think about it. This is kind of crazy, right? It's like if I have a disagreement with Lauren about a particular subject, and then I go to Wikipedia and edit a page so it supports my argument, and then I cite Wikipedia as a support for my argument.
It's pretty insidious.
That's dirty pool.
Yeah.
Is what that is.
Yeah. And I don't want to say that all anonymous Wikipedia editors are bad or doing nefarious things.
Oh, not at all.
For example, a couple of the other things came out of this is that they found out that someone from the CIA contributed a really long entry about lightsaber combat. Someone from DARPA had written fairly extensively about Shia LaBeouf. I mean, you know, it's just stuff, you know, it's not always bad.
Right, yeah.
And
we don't mean to suggest that it's always bad or that this happens all the time. It's the fact that it happens. That's the problem. And you don't, you know, unless you are actually adept at looking at the edits page and understanding what that means, you may not be aware of something that's going on that's not quite right. And so while the odds of that actually happening on any given page on any given day may be low, because you're talking about lots and lots of people using this resource and lots of opportunities to fiddle with it, it does happen. That's why you're like, you know, the odds are with you that you're going to be fine whenever you use Wikipedia.
Sure, but
there's still a chance.
There are like 85,000 regular contributors and 77,000 regular editors on Wikipedia as of 2013.
Right.
So,
and after that whole problem with Siegenthaler, where the quote unquote the joke about him being a suspect in the assassination of the Kennedys, Wales had instituted a new policy saying that unregistered users can no longer post new articles at all.
Oh, wow.
Because that was,
yeah.
He wanted to head off that problem. And then by registering, he hoped that would create more accountability. Now, of course, the SJ issue showed that there were other problems. And Wales came down pretty hard on that, too, once all the facts came out. In 2009, the arbitration committee had to restrict access to its site from the Church of Scientology IP addresses.
Right.
And also banned several anti-Scientologist editors because the two sides were both manipulating the same articles to either post Scientology in a positive or a negative light. Mm-hmm. Obviously, well, avoiding
that was probably around when that was around when Anonymous, I believe, was really involved in their crash campaign.
So the thing that was coming up into question was the neutral point of view here, and both sides were trying to use Wikipedia to bolster their own arguments. And whether you side with one or the other, it was clear that both sides had agendas. And, you know, some of those people may have been trying very hard to create an objective post, but there were a lot of people who really weren't. And that's where the banning and the IP address blocking came in. And that same year, Wikipedia became licensed under Creative Commons.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Which basically just means that it's licensed under their share and share alike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in other words, you don't have to worry about getting chased down by lawyers when you're reusing this material. And you cannot, like, a person who contributes to Wikipedia cannot claim that work to be their own at all. They have essentially signed off.
Right, right. You know, it's the content is still technically owned by the contributors, but it is freely reproducible and distributable.
Yeah, and when anyone can go in and edit it, actually that was one of those things that people worried about early on in Wikipedia. They said, wait a minute, I'm an awesome writer. I write awesome things.
I deserve credit for my awesome things.
Or even if I don't get credit, I certainly shouldn't be subjected to seeing other plebeians coming in and editing my awesome prose, where I wrote this amazing piece on Optimus Prime and his importance to Western culture, and some idiot came in and said that he turned into this model of a semi truck when clearly it was this other model of that was like an actual argument that happened on Wikipedia early
wow.
on. But people have to let go because that's kind of the way Wikipedia works.
Yeah.
And as a writer, I can completely understand with the people who get really antsy about that. Although I would often turn my writing assignments in to Chris and then never see them again until they were published on the page. And I was all right with it.
you learned to let go here at How Stuff Works.
I learned to let go, and I learned that this way I don't have to look at those red marks all over my paper because Chris just fixed it himself.
Takes care of it.
It was awesome. It made me feel like I was a better writer than I actually was.
All right. We've got a little bit more to talk about with Wikipedia, but before we dive into the next link, let's take another quick break.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
In 2012, do you have anything between 9 and 12?
I don't, actually.
Okay, good. Yeah. We're going to wrap up the timeline pretty soon. The 2012, the big story I have was, of course, that Wikipedia took place in the blackout day on January 18th.
Of SOPA and PIPA, yes.
Yeah. PIPA.
Sorry.
It's fine.
Let's do that.
You haven't been through the whole ordeal of talking about SOPA and PIPA. I called it PIPA for about 3 weeks until everyone else in technology just consistently called it PIPA, and I said, all right, fine.
Okay.
I've been wrong this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, SOPA and PIPA, those were, of course, the online piracy acts that were in consideration in Congress in the United States. And several sites ended up doing blackouts to protest this proposed legislation, to bring more attention to it and say the way these laws or these potential laws are worded, they could seriously harm the operation of the internet and cause trouble to lots of people and lots of organizations, and they should not be turned into law. And then in 2013...
Oh, but before we leave 2012, really quick,
right, sure.
Important cultural note, that is the year that Encyclopedia Britannica ceased publishing on paper after 244 years of doing so.
You know, it's also kind of interesting. I remember... And I didn't write this down in my research because it didn't occur to me while I was researching it. But I remember specifically there was a time when Wikipedia was starting to consider looking for experts to send in articles, mm-hmm. just like the old Newpedia days.
Right.
They were actually thinking about going to experts to get subject matter experts to write information for Wikipedia. At the same time, Britannica was looking at the possibility of crowdsourcing articles. So it looked like for a moment that these two models were about to flip-flop.
Uh-huh.
That didn't actually happen that way, but I remember hearing about that. Or my brain just invented it. One of the two.
Also, interesting cultural point. In between 2008 and 2012, this kind of dead space that we have created for ourselves in our timeline
yeah.
here, the Wikimedia Foundation total assets went from $5.6 million to about $49.3
million. Yeah, and again, it's existing on donations.
On donations only. And that's fabulous for the concept of shared knowledge, I think.
Right.
And also really interesting to see what kind of, I mean, to know exactly what they mean when they have those giant banners every year to beg for money.
Right, yeah, when you see Jimmy Wells' face on there mm-hmm. saying...
On every page.
Yeah, give money so that this can continue to exist. I mean, and
not that you shouldn't donate. I just think that it's an interestingly... It's a really cool number.
Yeah, and I think it's cool that they took that approach. I mean, it definitely gives them the benefit of saying, look, we're not beholden to any organization or company. We are accepting donations.
We are truly crowdsourced.
And this is really meant to be a tool to enrich the human race, really. It's meant to really make things better for everybody, and it's not meant to be the platform for one company to say, hey, buy our stuff instead of that other guy's stuff.
Right.
Well, in 2013, speaking about companies, so that's this year. Earlier this year, a story broke that British Petroleum, or BP, I should say BP.
BP is their better known.
The Brits hate it when I say British Petroleum because they said, look, don't bring us into
it's
this.
It's not our fault.
The story was that BP had edited its own Wikipedia page, maybe rewriting up to 44% of the content in order to make the environmental impact
of the oil spill.
Yeah, the Deepwater Horizon mm-hmm. and the Gulf, to make that seem less bad, maybe? It's kind of hard to word this properly, but essentially that they had sort of whitewashed the disaster and the follow-up to it. And here I'm quoting this directly from CNET, which reported on this. BP is not directly editing its page, but instead has apparently inserted a BP representative into the editing community who provides Wikipedia editors with text. The text is then copied as is onto the page by Wikipedia editors, while readers are none the wiser that sections pretending to be unbiased information are, in fact, vetted by higher-ups at BP before hitting the page. BP's image cleanup cleverly skirts Wikipedia's editorial rules, wherein Wikipedia editors are using text that BP posts on Wikipedia itself as the source, although the text is not published on BP's website. This way, the significant involvement of BP in its own entry is completely hidden from Wikipedia readers, while Wikipedia editors, as usual, argue and attack each other over editorial policy while BP's favorable PR editing continues.
Right, and All right, so there's really one person who is submitting these changes, someone by the name of Arturo Silver, Silva. He was from the Corporate Communications Department in Houston, and he was actually going through the correct channels to submit these changes. He suggested the changes to editors. He identified himself as a BP employee to those editors.
So essentially what was happening was that he was playing by the rules.
It was technically in good faith, aside from the part that you know, it was still
whitewashing the whole situation.
Right.
So these are, like, when we were talking about earlier about how, you know, Jimmy Wales had edited his own article and that he should have gone through the proper channels. These are those channels that we were talking about.
Right.
This is what the BP person was doing. But it was still putting in possibly, you know, you might say, well, biased information is clearly,
certainly.
I mean, clearly biased. It's from the company that the page is about.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't, you know, there's no way it could be unbiased. If I write my own Wikipedia page, that's going to be biased. Even if I think I'm being objective, I'm still going to talk about how freaking awesome I am, you know? So,
right. But, you know, I don't know, like at that point I would personally, and this is speaking as an editor, so I might be a little bit uppity about it. I would blame the editors at that point.
Sure.
Because if they're not going like, yeah, this is maybe not the right source to trust this information from. And this is going beyond a clearly factual change.
They're not showing good editorial judgment.
Correct.
Yeah, I agree with that. And so, you know, Jimmy Wales actually came down again and said that while BP is saying essentially that they totally played by the rules, he said that's not what the rules are there to protect.
Right.
The rules are there to protect against the kind of stuff that this company is pulling. It's just this company is pulling the tricks within the context of the rules, which either means that the rules themselves are faulty or the people who are in charge, like the editors, like you were saying, Lauren, are faulty. At any rate, this is something that, if I, you know, I don't want to put words into Wales's mouth, but I assume from what he has said, he would not want this to have happened.
Right.
So anyway, all of that being said, there's an awful lot of information on Wikipedia, and a lot of that,
over 24 million articles in 285 languages, in fact.
And then there's stuff on there that's incredibly useful. I mean, I use Wikipedia casually all the time.
Every day.
It is incredibly useful. But because of what we've talked about, that's why a lot of teachers and publications like How Stuff Works say you cannot use Wikipedia as a source. And it's because of the reasons we've listed. It's not that it's a bad thing. I actually think that Wikipedia is an amazing idea.
And
it's actually phenomenal to me that it's worked as well as it has.
Oh, right, right. You know, considering that certain portions of the internet can definitely be a wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Right.
And
if you look at YouTube comments and then you think, this is the same world that we live in, where we can go to Wikipedia and read an article about something, you know, something really technically advanced, and get a really good understanding of it. And this is a collaborative effort on the part of possibly hundreds of people.
Sure.
And then you go to YouTube and you read the comments and you think, how is this the same world? What happened? You know, it's amazing. But there are also some things that you can poke some fun at. Like, there was a, I wish I could remember which webcomic this was. And listeners, if you happen to know what I'm referring to, if you've been reading webcomics forever and this strikes a chord, let me know. But I remember reading a webcomic ages ago where it was a whole series about Wikipedia.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things they pointed out very snarkily was, if you were to assume that the the entries that have the most words are the most important to the human race, then Optimus Prime would be way more important than Abraham Lincoln.
I feel like that was Penny Arcade. Somebody, please write in and tell me that
I can
wrong.
Tell you it was not Penny
no?
Arcade.
You don't
well,
think so?
I mean, Penny Arcade very well may have made that same joke.
Okay.
But I don't read Penny Arcade.
Oh.
So I know it wasn't Penny Arcade.
All right. Well, that's fair.
I'm not criticizing Penny. Look, I don't read any webcomics anymore. I just all don't right. have the time.
Sure.
But I used to read a lot of them.
I recall seeing that as well. At any rate, whoever created it, somebody write in and tell us, because yeah. this is going to bug
yeah,
me.
I'll,
all day.
Otherwise, I used to. What, you know what's worse? I used to have these pinned up in my cubicle. They're not up there anymore, but I used to. Yeah, I can't even remember. But I used to have them. There's a whole bunch of them. But anyway,
why not?
That's one of those things. That's yeah. one of those things that you could joke about, is that seemingly irrelevant things would get a huge amount of attention because they were interesting. That, you know, especially stuff in geek culture that people are really, really passionately interested in, like, you know, which again shows you why there are these wikis now that exist all around these properties.
Right, right. And that's a perfect format for that kind of level of minutiae of interstory
yeah.
detail.
I mean, it's ridiculous when I can look up a comic book character and see every single iteration of that comic book character, and then I look up someone who was fundamentally important in some huge moment in history, and they have a fraction
right.
of that.
Not that you
couldn't cover the important contributions of that person in that amount of space. You might be able to, but it just gives you this weird feeling like, if I were to put these in scales,
yeah.
why is this one so heavy? But anyway.
But yeah, and you know, Wikipedia is, as of January 2013, the fifth most popular website in the world, behind only Google, Yahoo, Microsoft, and Facebook.
Yeah.
And in fact, ahead of Amazon, Apple, and eBay. So I...
Yeah, I mean, they're doing... And again, there's a lot of valuable stuff on there. So I know that we definitely kind of criticized Wikipedia quite a bit in this podcast. But keep in mind, we're talking about specifically in the use for things like academic papers.
Like academic research. And I do want to say what Jonathan and I both do, I think, is did we say this already? We go to Wikipedia and we go straight to the resource section.
Yeah, you look at the references and you take a look and see, like, because there you can learn more about, you know, go to the places where the people who have written the article on Wikipedia, where they got their information from. Because, I mean, that also allows you to remove the interpreter as
right.
well, right? Because anytime you're reading an article on Wikipedia, you're reading an interpretation of someone else's stuff. Because, you know, that's another thing we didn't mention. On Wikipedia, you do not publish primary information. You don't publish information for the first
right.
time
it
on
is,
Wikipedia.
It is specifically against the rules.
Yeah, you have to, if you're going to present a fact that someone could look up and verify or reject, you have to be able to cite it.
And that wraps up another classic episode of Tech Stuff. Hope you guys enjoyed it. If you have any suggestions for future Tech Stuff topics, no matter what it may be, if it's a company or a technology, a trend in tech, maybe it's a great innovator, you would like to have sort of a biography of that person, let me know. You can reach out to me on Twitter or on Facebook. We use the handle TechStuff, HSW at both, and I'll talk to you again really soon. TechStuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel, it's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.